Welcome, everyone, to episode 21 of the City of Champions podcast. My name is Edgar, your co-host, and I'm joined by my co-host, Gene, here to talk about the Dodgers, the Lakers, everything that's been going on.
Dodgers have a great series in Pittsburgh. They pick up the sweep. How are you feeling about that series, Edgar? We had talked about coming off a tough series against Atlanta and needing to get this sweep. So how are you feeling about this one?
I felt good. You know, we spoke about how this stretch of games were the games that we needed to win. You know, you come across a row of games of teams you should beat, and the Dodgers are doing that. They swept the Pirates. Great starts by our guys. Really bounced back from tough last few weeks.
Definitely, bro. I agree with you. And this is the kind of series, like you said, that we gotta just go in and take care of business. And these are the kind of series where I feel like hitters can start finding their groove, right? You're playing a weaker opponent. You get a couple hits. You start feeling good about yourself. You get your confidence going. You build your confidence in these series. So when you feel face these tougher opponents that we have coming up, we've talked about the three series that the Dodgers kind of have to close out June, where they face the Padres, the Cubs, and the Giants. So you use these series right here against these weaker opponents to get your confidence up, to get going. And that's exactly what we did. It was, you know, specifically for me, I thought it was great to see Turner have those two home runs in that second game. Cause he's kind of been struggling. You know, he started the season really hot, then he hit a real rough slump. So it was good to see the ball go over the fence a couple times for him. And as you mentioned, solid starts. You know, Buehler had the first game in, and I was impressed that even though, Walker Buehler didn't have a ton of strikeouts, he still had a very good start. And then a solid start from Urias as well. Julio was struggling a little in those early innings, but was able to kind of settle down and give us six innings. And even though that game just went seven. But talk to me a little bit about how you felt about Tony Gonsolin. A lot of people excited to get him back from the IL, but has a really rough outing. I think he had like five walks, only went like 1 2/3. How are you feeling about that, man? Worried, or you just kind of feel like he's just shaking off the rust?
I'm not worried because it's still early. But I knew that this would happen with, you know, a young guy like Gonsolin. I think they took too long to bring him back. I know they want to sort of ramp him up for each, you know, level in the process. But sometimes you just got to throw someone in there and, you know, whether that's in the, you know, in the lower leagues or at the major league level, you got to throw a guy out there, let him figure it out. Because, you know, after this rough outing, it's probably going to take a few more for him to really straighten out. And that's not something we need, because this game essentially turned into a bullpen game, which has been very rough on us in the past. And
you love bullpen game, bros. You love them.
they're tough, you know, because we struggle after that. And to put ourselves in, you know, those situations, it's not right. So Gonsolin's got to just go out there and he's got to eat it. You know, whatever it takes, he's got to push through it. None of these 1.2 inning games. The reason you took so long to bring him back is so that he could pitch more than 1.2 innings. If you just wanted him for one or two innings before knowing you're going to pull the plug, then why not bring him back 4 weeks ago when he was ready to go in for the bullpen, right? And warm him up that way. So, I don't know. The whole handling of the Gonsolin injury has been frustrating.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I don't think this is what they intended. I think they would have hoped to get four innings out of him, three or four innings. He was probably on that whole like four innings or, you know, 70 pitches, whatever comes first, because he threw 66 pitches. So, you know, he threw a good amount of pitches. It's just because he couldn't really find the zone. So for me, I think it's just a little bit of rust. But, you know, shout out to the bullpen for picking it up, man. 7 1/3, no runs, one hit. They did a great job picking him up. And you said, like you said, man, it was basically a bullpen game, but we can say we had a blessing in the next game because it only went seven innings. So we only needed one arm out of the bullpen before the game got rained out. Julio took care of the first six. So, you know, shout out to the bullpen for doing their thing. I'm hoping Gonsolin can kind of settle in and just, you know, be a solid fifth starter for us, man. The bullpen really needs someone to pick up that fifth starter role. And if he can't do it, then I think then it's time to look to make a move, or call someone else up. Cause we definitely, at this point, we need a consistent fifth starter. But yeah, it was another, like, just takeaway for me is just, it's good to see the offense get going, man. We put up, 6 runs in the last game, 6 runs, 10 hits. And in the first game, 5 runs, 10 hits. So just good to see the bats coming to life, man. I would have liked to see more runs in that second game, you know, didn't really get much going there besides those 2 Turner home runs. But like I said, man, these are the series where you want these guys to get some hits, get their confidence going. We got Texas next, another weaker opponent. Same thing, beat up on them, get your confidence going, get the bats hot as we start rolling into, I think after Texas, I believe we got Philadelphia. Yeah, we got Philadelphia after that. And then we got Arizona. So really we got, you know, 4 series where we can just really get going. You know, Philadelphia has some solid pitchers. So, but yeah, man, I'm happy the Dodgers took care of business this series. The sweep is what I was hoping for. I thought they should have got the sweep and I'm happy we did.
Yeah. And you know, we hope that continues going into Texas. We've got Kershaw going the first game, really eager to see how he bounces back from a bad and rough start, right? And a, you know, rough couple of weeks for Kershaw. But he's the kind of guy that's going to push through it and he's going to come back and he's going to give you a strong, you know, a strong performance. So I'm confident he's going to go out there against Texas and he's going to shut it down. It's what he does. It's what champions do. And so really excited about that. But you mentioned trades, right? Gonsolin specifically. Perhaps being trade bait in maybe a blockbuster move for the Dodgers. Not that we need it, but we certainly have the capability and the room to make something happen. Anything come to mind? Any guy you'd like to acquire?
Well, I feel like the name that is constantly tossed around that I see, like when I read rumors, is Max Scherzer. I don't know if you've seen that, but he's been popping up on Twitter a lot and just like, you know, different Dodger fan pages and whatnot, you know, just because the Nationals are struggling and he's a legit starter and kind of put him at the back of our rotation. I don't know that I have, you know, I feel like the Dodgers definitely have needs, but part of it, I think for me at least, is like I like to see what the team looks like healthy. So I feel for us, June is a very big month to show what we can do as a healthy roster with the fifth starter back, see everyone kind of settle into their bullpen roles and just see what we got. You know, but it never hurts. I mean, for the Dodgers also, it never hurts to add stuff, you know, for the long playoff run. You know, we're going to always say more bullpen arms, right? More bullpen arms. Another starter if you can, in case Gonsolin can't figure it out this year, you move him to the bullpen. And maybe you do that. Maybe it's easier to get a starter. You get a starter, you move Gonsolin to the bullpen. You know, just for this year, just because of the injury that he was dealing with early on. You know, you build him up over the summer for next season or something. And also, you know, never hurts to have another solid bat, maybe off the bench or something. But I'm not too worried about trades just yet. You know, I think we have a solid ball club and I'd like to see what, June looks like, man. What about you? Any thoughts on trades?
No, I think the Scherzer is pretty interesting, right? Cause he's 36, so he's getting up there in age, but he's dominating like he does every year. And just thinking about adding that to what we already have, you basically have 4 number ones in one rotation, which is probably, would probably make it the best, like, starting 5 in the history of baseball.
And here's the thing is, in regards to Scherzer's, he's a free agent. So, you know, you might be able to get him for, you know, a reasonable price. You might not have to overpay for him. So, I mean, maybe you explore that. I just, with the depth the Dodgers have, I just don't feel like you need to overpay for anything. I'm always of the mindset of, if you're going to trade, like, go big. I'm either like, go big in the sense of like, target like a stud starting pitcher and, you know, trade some like real prospects, or, you know, go bargain hunting, which I think Friedman is very good at, you know, kind of, you know, hitting like the bargain bins and just getting a fifth starter who can give you five solid innings every start, you know? So we'll see. I feel like Scherzer, yes, sounds great, but, you know, might be a little bit tough, man, but he's having a great season. 2.21 ERA. You know, that's his best ERA in like the last, that would be like his best career ERA. He's never had an ERA that low. So that's incredible. Definitely probably trying to get that next, one more big contract.
He's definitely going to get a contract for at least, I'm saying 2-3 years, only because he's been able to stay healthy and because he just seems like a guy with good mechanics, which helps with longevity. Getting him would be a dream scenario, right? To the, rich go the spoils is what they say. But I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking about other pitchers I might take on. Maybe Chapman out of New York.
I saw his name flying around in some rumors, but that's just if New York like really craters, if the Yankees really crater. And I mean that, yeah, AL East is always tough. Boston is way out playing what anyone thought they would be, or outperforming what anyone thought they would be. And then you have, the Blue Jays are young and hungry. The damn Tampa Bay Rays always find a way to win. Doesn't matter who they have on their roster. So yeah, it's going to be tough. I always like to look at like what teams are underperforming and, you know, don't want to like maintain like salaries on their roster. So, you know, Washington definitely fits that mold. You know, they're, 9 games below .500. So they definitely look to, you know, cut some salary. I know Pittsburgh has a solid reliever, Rodriguez. The Pittsburgh Pirates have a solid reliever that's been linked to the Dodgers. You know, you always have the Cincinnati Reds. They still have Luis Castillo. He's been having a tough year, Luis Castillo. He popped up in rumors for the Dodgers over the summer a lot. He's not having a great year, but he can be someone who's cheap, and the Dodgers maybe can turn his season around. But he was pretty elite the last couple seasons.
How about this one? Let me throw one at you. One that, you know, it's also another dream scenario, but people have thrown it out lately. What would it take to get Chris Bryant?
So I saw you talking about that on Twitter going back and someone else, and I didn't like what you offered. I thought you offered too much, by the way. He's a free agent. So you don't pay too much for free agents, man, because you don't know if you're going to, you know, you're going to re-sign him. So do you have his numbers in front of you, his stats?
I know he's doing really well.
He is. He's definitely doing having
really, really well.
He's definitely having a bounce back season. Let me see here. Let me pull up his stats. So similar to Scherzer, having probably one of his better seasons, 38 RBI, 65 hits, 40 runs. Yeah,
they're trying to get paid.
Yeah, for sure. They're all getting ready contract to go into free agency. Yep. Motherfuckers know what they're doing when it's a contract season over here playing games.
Yeah. Right, so 13 what would home you give runs. Up then? What would you give up, for him?
For Chris Bryant, what would I give up based on the season he's having? So here's the first question. Where does he play?
Third.
Where does Turner go?
Put him at first. Muncy at second.
This is where I see it. You trade for someone like Chris Bryant. He's playing every day, right? And Turner plays almost every day. Muncy plays about every day. Seager, Lux are going to play about every day. Bellinger and Mookie play every day. So I call the Cubs and I say, yo, let me hold Chris Bryant for the rest of the season. I will give you Keibert Ruiz, who's our top catching prospect, and I will give you another maybe like top fifth, like a 10 to 15 like prospect, but you got to take AJ Pollock's contract. And if they say no, then I offer a little bit more in the terms of prospects. But I don't think the Dodgers do that because I don't think they're that desperate to get off of AJ Pollock's contract. So I don't think they make that move. I think the Dodgers feel good offensively. I think they target more of like a situational hitter, like a David Freese type, Chase Utley type guy off the bench. But you know who I look at, man? I look at teams like the Minnesota Twins, who really stacked up their roster to try to compete, who are in dead last in the AL Central. And I see what's up with them. You know, teams like the Detroit Tigers, you know, the Kansas City Royals, these teams who are really struggling, who might have some valuable veteran pieces that they don't need and want some young possible talent. You know, Texas, I know Texas has maybe one or two pretty decent pitchers on their roster. Seattle again continues to struggle, but they're not too far out of it. Those are the teams you want to target. Like, hey, let me get this, veteran pitcher or veteran reliever or veteran hitter you don't have use for right now, and I'll send you some prospects, save you some money. I think Luis Castillo is a really intriguing pitcher if Cincinnati decides to sell, as well as Pittsburgh. They have that Rodriguez, that great reliever. But Scherzer, man, Scherzer's the name, but everyone's going to want him, man. Everyone's going to want him.
And that's the thing. What happens if the Padres make a big move?
I'm always in the camp of, like, if the team you're competing against gets better, you need to get better. So if the Padres, like, let's say the Padres went out and they got a Chris Bryant or something, put him in left field or some shit, I don't know, then you need to make a move as well. The good thing about the Dodgers is we have some prospects that we can afford to move. For example, like, catching is something we have a great amount of depth, and Keibert Ruiz is raking right now. You know, I think trade deadline's a little bit of a ways away, so we'll see how everything shakes out.
So any other thoughts maybe on the sticky stuff?
Bro, so I wanted to ask you about that. Like, man, it's definitely, I've never really paid attention to it ever in baseball until this season, because of the article that was released last year. And it talked about all these pitchers using the sticky stuff, like different substances, just to get, better spin rates on the baseball and whatnot. And now MLB saying they're going to start to crack down on it and start checking pitchers consistently. It's interesting. And then you see the DeGrom video that was posted on Twitter about him, like, you know, kind of rubbing his hand in his glove to clearly looking, you know, clearly tapping for something. And I don't know if you saw today, there was an image of James McCann's shin guard, and it looked like it had a tar-like substance on it. Did you see that?
No, I missed that.
Yeah, so it was his shin guard, and looked like there was a tar-like substance on it. But I thought it was even funnier how all the Mets literally came to DeGrom's defense. Like, one, did you see that? One after another. And they're like, you know, tweeting each other, like, no way DeGrom cheats. The goat doesn't need to cheat. What do you think, Marcus Stroman? No, not at all. He's the greatest of all time. Like, what do you think? Like, Tehan Walker or whatever. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he's the greatest. You know, well, what do you think, James McCann? And I just thought that was hilarious how they came to his defense. But that video definitely looks suspect. And so I'm curious, man. I'm curious to see what baseball does and how this turns out, man. What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I think baseball messed up when it decided to first off, let the Astros cheat and get away with it. Then they went and changed the baseball, you know. For those that don't know, baseball bought majority stake in Rawlings, the maker of the baseball. And ever since, they've been changing the baseball. Now, most of us know that they've been changing the baseball. I think this year they made it lighter, which means there's more movement on hard thrown pitches. So having extra grip for that extra spin rate absolutely makes sense. It seems like that's, if you were to guess how baseball players might cheat this, you know, decade, because it seems like there's always something going on, you know, what would they do? And a lot of us could have pointed at using sticky substances because, again, getting more spin on the ball, more movement on it, it means you're going to be a better pitcher, which means you're going to get paid. It's the A-Rod plan.
I hear you, man. I hate that Major League Baseball continues to mess with the baseballs. First, it's like the juiced up baseballs for all the home runs. And now it's like these deflated baseballs to improve pitching. And it's just like, leave the baseballs alone, man. There was nothing wrong with them. Just let baseball, you know, just let it be what it's be. Let it be what it's going to be. And in regards to the sticky stuff, this is like my one point on this. You're either going to enforce it or you're not. Don't be like this in between. It's either going to be a rule and you're going to enforce it consistently and there's going to be consequences, or you're not. But don't do this back and forth, man. Because it seems like everyone knew about it. When I read this article, like when I first read the article that came out, I don't know if you read it, man, but when the article came out and I read it, I was like, what the hell? I was caught off guard. Like, I didn't know that pitchers were using stuff to doctor their pitches. I had no idea. And so I was asking one of my buddies who, played college baseball and knows a couple pros and stuff. He's like, oh yeah, that's normal. Everyone uses that. I was like, what the hell? And so then if everyone's using it, if everyone knows except me that everyone's using it, then just let them use it, or crack down on it and let's, you know, make it a rule and like, let's enforce it. But I don't like this in between stuff where like everyone knows that it's going on and we just let it go. Like that's annoying.
Bro, it's steroids 2.0, the exact same thing as steroids. And it was always legal, right? Until it wasn't. And when it became illegal, you had this crazy downfall with players, their reputations, their careers. It's either going to be illegal or it's not. But make that clear, right? With steroids, everyone knew about it, but only a few guys were held accountable. Barry Bonds being one of them, Roger Clemens being another one of them. Now those guys might not get into the Hall of Fame. I don't know. Baseball needs to crack down on it or not, but make it clear to everyone what's going on so we can, you know, keep playing.
Yeah, I don't like it. I feel like we have rules for a reason, so let's enforce them or not, and let's just keep it pushing. But, yeah, any other thoughts on this or the Dodgers, bro?
Not really. I think we're ready to move on to our fan questions, right?
So our fan questions were all around the Lakers, you know, because we're in the offseason now. So we need stuff to talk about in regards to the Lakers, and everyone's hella emotional and have a ton of questions. And so real quick before we get to the questions, because the questions are about the Lakers offseason, I kind of just real quick put a summary together. So let me just give everyone a summary on the Lakers situation going into the offseason so we just kind of know where we're at. So the first thing is like who's on the books and who's under contract for next season. So we have Bron, AD, KCP, Kuzma, and Gasol. And between those five players, we owe them $105 million. And just so everyone knows, the salary cap for next year is projected at $112 million, and $136 million is when the luxury tax kicks in. So we're very close to being capped already. Now, Harrell has a player option, I believe, for like about $9 million. So if Harrell picks up his player option, like we are capped. But I don't think he will. But we'll talk about that later. Then we have a team option for McKinney, Alphonso McKinney. We have one restricted free agent in Talen Horton-Tucker. Then we have a bunch of unrestricted free agents. Unrestricted meaning they can go and sign wherever they want. We don't have their rights or any. I mean, we have their rights, but they're free to go negotiate with whoever. So we have McLemore, Drummond, Schroeder, Dudley, Caruso, Keith, Matthews. So a ton of our roster are restricted free agents. We talked about the salary cap, 112. Draft picks, we have one draft pick this year, just our first round draft pick. And after this season, we start really conceding those picks to New Orleans. So that's our current situation. So let's get into these questions then, bro. So let's start off with the first one. The first question I put down just because it's something I wanted to discuss and I wanted to get your opinion on it. So, do you think Dennis Schroeder is a good piece to play alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis, bro? What are your thoughts? We had basically a full season of seeing Dennis Schroeder. We did have some injuries with Bron and AD, Schroeder and, you know, COVID protocol twice, but I feel like we got enough of a sample size. So how do you feel about how he complements LeBron and AD?
He doesn't.
Why do you feel that way, bro?
He doesn't because he just doesn't fit the system. He doesn't fit the players. He's the guy that needs the ball in his hand to be effective. He doesn't really produce for others. He's very predictable in his playing style, so there's not a lot of like a Rondo, right, where you see him make the smart play every time. Dennis Schroeder doesn't do that as consistently. He's a great offensive player, but he's shy, or he questions himself, or he something about the big stage that is too much for him. You know, it just seems like he isn't the kind of player to lead a team to the playoffs. Certainly not for the Lakers. I don't know. He doesn't fit your regular point guard mold. He's more of a scoring guard. So I'm not saying he's a bad player. He just doesn't fit what we have going on here in LA.
Yeah, man. So it's tough. I think at times we saw Dennis Schroeder play really well, and even in the playoffs, he had some really good games, right? Because we even had an episode where we were like, yo, pay that man his money, because he was balling. And he even showed, even in the second half of game six, he showed great energy, right? It's just, I think the word I would use to describe him is just inconsistent, very inconsistent with his offense, and I think part of that is his shooting. He doesn't have a consistent shot, a consistent three-point jumper, so that really makes it hard for him because if you're going to play alongside LeBron James, you have to also understand that he's going to have the ball in his hand like 80% of the time. And Schroeder is someone who needs the ball in his hand. So he needs to be able to adjust his game to play off the ball. And part of that is being able to make open jumpers or catching the ball and being ready to attack quickly. I had said even like going into the playoffs that I thought we should have moved Schroeder to the bench and let him lead the bench unit and move Caruso into the starting lineup. I thought that would have been better just for chemistry purposes. And I think if he does come back, that that might be something we need to look at. Move him to the bench. Put Caruso or someone else in the starting lineup and move him to the bench so that he can have the ball in his hand and lead the offense. I think that's the best, like the best way for us to get the most out of him. So, do I think he's a good piece to play alongside LeBron and AD? Not really. He wasn't horrible, but he's not my favorite either. So any other thoughts on Dennis Schroeder before we move on to our next question?
Nope. Pretty much said what I felt. Let's move on to the next question.
All right. So from at Leanne R19. So she's shooting us a couple different questions. So let's start off with each one, one by one. How do you feel about Frank Vogel's coaching this postseason? So how are you feeling about Vogel's coaching, bro?
I am disappointed. You know, and I'm reminded of two things. I'm reminded of Mike Tyson's everyone's got a plan till you get punched in the face, right?
Mm.
And I'm also reminded of, you know, Phil Jackson and adjustments. He was all about making adjustments, in-game adjustments. If one way isn't working, find another way that, you know, does work.
Yeah.
And I'll, you know, by that vein, you can also think of the coaches that constantly preach, let's stick with the plan, let's stick with the plan. It'll start paying off eventually. Let's stick with the plan. But I'm not really with those guys or that philosophy. I'm more of a Phil Jackson guy, right? You've got to find a way to work when something isn't working. In baseball, if you're not hitting the home run, you go to small ball. You make it work. You find ways to score runs. In basketball, you switch it up. Switch up the defense. Switch up the lineups. Try something different. And with Vogel, it seems like he did that for the very last game when we were down AD, we were down Caruso, and that's when he started to get creative with it. And by that time, it was too late, you know? And I know it worked for him last year, playing his matchups, but again, in-game adjustments, it clearly wasn't working. We knew this before we were going into the playoffs. He should have made those adjustments and, he didn't. So, I mean, again, he won a championship, so you can't say he's a horrible coach, but I feel like this, you know, this offseason, he really let everyone down.
So, I think I feel the same about Vogel. You know, he led us to a championship and then this year we were balling until we got hurt. And even in the playoffs, you know, we both feel that if AD was healthy, we would have won that series, right? And I think he used the first game to probe, then he adjusted for the next two games. We looked good. And then game four, we were looking okay, but AD gets hurt. And then, you know, it kind of just all unraveled after AD got hurt. So I will say this about Vogel. I'm fine with him as a head coach, but I said this in our last pod that he needs to get an offensive coordinator type coach. If there's one area he can really get better at and we need to get better at is offensive creativity. Our offense is way too predictable. The ball, we're very stagnant. The ball just stays in one area too long, very easy to defend. We don't have multiple sets and counters. The ball doesn't move enough. And so I definitely think we need an offensive coordinator to, complement Vogel's, cause he's a really good defensive mind, but I think we need better offensive creativity. And I don't think any of our head coaches have that. So we might want to look, or my fault, any of our assistant coaches have that. So we might want to look for some assistants who can come in and spruce up the offense. The next question she asks is, So what is next for the Lakers? So what do you see are some moves that need to occur? And it's kind of a multi-part question. So what's next? Who's leaving? Who's staying? And who are you looking to acquire in the offseason? So give us your whole offseason plan. So let's start with this. First part. Who's leaving?
Who's leaving? All right, let's see.
So I broke it down for you. You see the free agents here. You see Harrell has an option. McKinney has a team option. THT is a restricted free agent. Then you see McLemore, Drummond, Schroeder, Dudley, Caruso, Keith, Matthews. So who do you see staying? Who do you see leaving?
I think it really depends on the situation, right? Do we want to make a move for another star, perhaps? Another all-star? Can we do that? If that's a road we want to sort of go down, then we've got to act aggressive, right? We've got to decide what we want to do with Schroeder. We've got to decide, Harrell's got to decide what he wants to do with his contract. Are we going to
move on
Caruso? It depends, right? So in my mind, right, I would like to go after another star player, like a true number three. You know, we all thought Kuzma was going to be that guy. He clearly didn't turn out to be that guy. So we need a true number three. And if we want to make that happen, that means we've got to move Kuz somewhere. That means we've got to move KCP somewhere, add those salaries up. That's about 20 million. If 26. If Harrell leaves, that frees up the 9 million of, you know, that of, that it he's doesn't. Costing.
What do you mean So what we have to understand, and this is like, I feel like a lot of like Laker fans on Twitter don't get this, is so we are hard capped. We are a hard cap team. So what I mean by that is, remember, the salary cap is 112 and we're already at 1.5 without Harrell. So if Harrell leaves, it only gives us 7 million worth of room. And that's also if we don't bring McKinney back. We only have 7 million worth of room. So you can't bundle Harrell's contract, is what I'm trying to say. Unless he opts in. If he opts in, then you can bundle and trade him.
Okay, so if he opts out, he's not counting against the salary cap.
He doesn't, but he doesn't, but we're still at 105. I didn't include his salary.
All right, well, either way, he's not counting against us. Schroeder, the same thing, right? Do you want to sign and trade him? Caruso, do you want to make him an offer? Who else is going to, make an offer for him? Ideally, I think you can, again, move the Kuz contract. You can move the KCP contract. You can get some first round picks for that, coupled with what we already have, which is another first round pick. So three first round picks is starting to look more enticing for teams trying to make moves on their end. Teams that are trying to rebuild, right? We have teams like the Wizards and a guy like Bradley Beal, who I think is pulling in $34 million a year. Is Washington a team that wants to sort of start over? Do they want to continue with this Russell Westbrook, Bradley Beal experiment? Do they want to build around a young core of, pretty decent players and sort of position themselves like the Nets did this year, where they acquired two superstar free agents, right? Do the Wizards want to do that? Does that mean, trading Bradley Beal? Can we afford Bradley Beal? So there are certainly a lot of scenarios, and yes, the answer is yes.
No, we literally can. Like, that's the thing. That's, we literally cannot afford him.
We can with a three-team trade. It can work out. If we sign and trade Schroeder,
we'd have to sign and trade Schroeder. You're right.
Exactly. So there's ways to make it work. And again, getting a third team involved would be key. Turning that Kuz and KCP contract into a couple first rounders. So there's definitely ways to do it. And are we going to be that aggressive though to begin with? Are we that kind of front office? It seems like we are. But, who knows?
Yeah. So, it's tough because you have to, think, is Rob Pelinka going to do that? Is he going to try to pursue a third star? So, I've been spending a lot of time, thinking about this and researching this, and I've come up with possible trade targets, and I've come up with possible free agent targets and everything. So, I'm going to push the agenda of run it back. I say we run it back, and I say the reason I say run it back is because we're hard capped and because we can go over the cap to keep our own free agents. So who stays, who leaves? So let's start off with Montrezl Harrell. If he wants to stay, cool. I'm not paying him more than the 9. I'm not giving him more. I'm not going to extend him. So if he wants to stay and opt in, I tell him, cool, you can stay, you can opt in. You know, because he's a valuable bench piece. You know, didn't play much in the playoffs. I guess he could have played more, but, you know, but he's a valuable bench piece for the regular season. But I'm not extending him. I'm not giving him any more money. If he wants to opt out, cool, he can opt out. But I'm not signing him for more than $9 million. So if he wants to dip, cool, he can dip. I'm not tripping on losing him. McKinney, I would keep him just because he's veteran minimum. Drummond, I don't re-sign Drummond unless it's for the veteran minimum. I'm not giving him any more than the veteran minimum. I might give him, maybe I give him the taxpayer mid-level exception, which I believe is like $5 million. Maybe. But I'm not giving him any more than that. McLemore, I'd re-sign McLemore for the minimum. I would re-sign Dudley for the minimum. I would re-sign Caruso for maybe like $7 million, like a 3-year, $21 million deal. I'd give Caruso something like that. I'd bring Keith back for the minimum. I'd bring Matthews back for the minimum. So that gives you McKinney, McLemore, Dudley, Keith, Matthews. So is that like 5, 1, 2, 3, 4? Yeah, 5 players for the veteran minimum. So that gives you 10 players so far under contract. Let's say Harrell walks. I re-sign THT for maybe something around, you know, something similar to Caruso, maybe a little bit less, like a, maybe like a 4-year, $16 million deal, something like that. You know, give him around $4 to $5 million a year. Maybe like a 4-year, $20 million deal, something like that. But I bring back THT and Caruso. And then, Drummond's kind of difficult. I would take Drummond back. But not for more than $5 million. And so I bring him back, no more than $5 million. And then, as far as like, who do I target in the off season? So, and then I re-signed Schroeder. And I think people who listen to the podcast and know me know I'm not a big fan of Dennis Schroeder. But if we don't re-sign him, we literally cannot sign anyone close to as good as him. Cause at that point, all we have left, if we use our taxpayer mid-level exception, all we have left is veteran minimum contracts. So using that $5 million, like, contract, that one contract that we have, that one contract slot we can offer is very strategic. That's why I don't know if I give it to Drummond. Cause I feel like there's a lot of centers. So real quick, I was looking at the free agent market and center is a very stacked market. Wings. Not so much, and guards not so much. So I feel like you can let let Drummond walk, and you can go get a Myers Leonard, a Hassan Whiteside, a Dieng, a Dwight Howard. You can get all the a Daniel Theis, a Cody Zeller. You know, you can get a Kelly Olynyk. There's all these people, you know, Enes Kanter, Bobby Portis, like, there's all these players you can get for probably close to the veteran, like, for the veteran minimum. So I feel like center is not a position, and you got Gasol still. Don't forget, you got Gasol on the roster, got Kaycock, you know, we had him on a two-way contract. So I feel like there's options at center for the cheap. So that's why I probably don't use that $5 million on Drummond. And then as far as guards, and I only put down realistic players for us. So just in case everyone's wondering, like, well, where are all these other players? Why don't you have like Mike Conley on there and stuff? Cause we can't afford them. So you have like Avery Bradley, J.J. Redick, T.J. McConnell, Wayne Ellington, Derrick Rose, Josh Richardson, Patty Mills. So just some different guards I feel like we can get. So if we need shooting, you know, you got a J.J. Redick. I feel like Derrick – so here's a question for you. Would you rather pay Schroeder 4 years, $84 million, or let him walk and bring on Derrick Rose?
Bring Derrick Rose.
So I would too. So I don't know if he comes for $5 million, but if I can get Derrick Rose for that taxpayer mid-level exception, I'd let Drummond and Schroeder. I mean, you could re-sign Schroeder, but I would rather use maybe, you know, target someone like Derrick Rose, or someone like J.J. Redick, or Bullock, Bazemore, McDermott, you know, Otto Porter Jr. So P.J. Tucker. So there's definitely some players there. So I don't know fully what the roster is going to look like, but I think some big questions. So the big questions are, number one, do we bring Drummond back? and for how much if we do. I'm in favor of letting him walk. I feel like you can find something pretty comparable to him on the free agent market for the veteran minimum. Schroeder, I bring him back just because I don't think you can find something very comparable to him on the free agent market for cheap or for the veteran minimum. So I bring him back. And part of bringing him back is also you can always use him as a trade piece, right? You can always re-sign him and then just use him as a trade piece. So we shall see, man. It's going to be an interesting offseason. Let's talk about this question, bro. You kind of gave your answer as far as who are we looking to acquire in the offseason. So trade targets. So you want Bradley Beal.
That's who I want, yeah. Bradley Beal. Only guy we need.
That would be great. I just don't think it's realistic, honestly. So I looked at maybe what I thought were some more realistic trade targets. And these are trade targets where we don't have to do sign-in trades with Dennis Schroeder. We can just pick these people up outright, I think. So I put CJ McCollum. If the Blazers want to – I don't think that they'll take our offer. But if we said like, hey, you know, Kuz, Gasol, KCP, first-round draft pick, future second-round draft picks or whatever. I don't think they make that trade, but I'm just saying like it. We could get there in terms of salary. Now, this is the one I think is most realistic is Buddy Hield. I do think we can get Buddy Hield, and I think a starting lineup. So Buddy Hield makes $22 million. So KCP and Kuzma together, and let's say they wanted a draft pick. That would put us at around $28 million. And so that means Sacramento will need to send us Hield in something else. So I definitely think, you know, maybe that's something Sacramento looks at because of Hield's like long-term contract. He's owed 22, 21, 19. And so I think that's definitely something we can obtain. I think he's a player we could definitely target and probably get who brings great shooting, plays a two. And then I think you re-sign Schroeder. And then I think a starting lineup of Schroeder, Hield, LeBron, AD, and then whoever at the center, you know, Gasol or someone else, I think that's a pretty solid starting lineup. I think it shores up our shooting. We drop off a little bit defensively, but we've always been a pretty good defensive team. But Hield would have by far been our best three-point shooter this year and shoots in volume. So just a different type of shooter we've never had. And I put another target just because the salary would not be hard to match. But Zach LaVine, he makes 19.5. But I don't think the Bulls move him.
None of those are happening, man. Come on. These are the Lakers. We're about making the big moves to win now, not...
We just don't have the assets. That's the thing. We don't... Like, if we had our draft picks... I'd be like, yeah, for sure. No problem. We don't have any draft picks and we don't really have the young, affordable talent that people want. Literally, the only contracts we have to trade are KCP, Kuz, and Gasol. And Harrell, if he opts in, but I don't think he opts in. McKinney, if we pick up his player option, but he doesn't really move the needle. I guess we can sign and trade THT if we wanted. And then honestly, I don't think anyone values Schroeder, especially at $21 million.
I already told you, the key is turning KCP and Kuz's contract into first round picks.
But that's not enough. Okay, but that's not enough.
That would put us at 3 first round picks. Someone would be interested in that.
Yeah, for example, if I am, let's say, the Washington Wizards, and you said, hey, 3 first round picks for Bradley Beal. One, I don't even know if the contract, like, I don't even know if, yeah, it'll be close. It would be really close. I think we'd go over. But it'd be close, but I mean, I'm not trading you Bradley Beal for just 3 first round picks. Like, what am I going to do with 3 first round picks? Especially 3 Laker first round picks.
That's why you get a third team involved. And that's why you could do sign and trade with Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, I don't want Dennis Schroeder either if I have Russell Westbrook. Why do I want Dennis Schroeder when Russell Westbrook's...
Again, if you get a third team involved, you send Dennis Schroeder somewhere else to get the pieces you need. To put alongside 3 first round picks to get Bradley Beal to come over.
I mean, if Pelinka can get that done, bro, give him, you know, executive of the year. I just don't see it happening. I think people are overvaluing Schroeder on the open market. I don't think teams are going to be lining up to give you draft picks for him or giving you young talent for him. I wouldn't at least.
Yeah, but what about someone looking for salary relief? We talked to Indiana, right?
But
they might want to shed something.
I mean, yeah, but you don't really get salary relief if you have to take Dennis Schroeder's contract back on. So we're not really giving them salary relief. You get salary relief when you trade expiring contracts. We don't have any expiring contracts to.
He will be an expiring contract.
No, he won't, bro.
No, he's got 2 years.
No, Schroeder
you have to
has
sign him
no
4 years.
Yeah,
So it's
a difficult situation, man. And everyone's been throwing that around. Dennis Schroeder, sign and trade. I don't think anyone's going to take him. I don't think anyone's lining up to take him off the Lakers' hands, honestly. I think we're going to get stuck with him. And I think that's okay. I think we can assign him to an extension. And then after we extend him, we can trade him later in the season at the trade deadline. You know, because then you have his contract and you can pair it with Kuzma. And easily those two contracts will get you the $30 million. Or you can pair it with KCP and easily those contracts will get you the $30 million, which is what the Lakers were looking to do this offseason for Kyle Lowry, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing we didn't, you know, get him.
And
so they, you know, there's a big move in there. I know there's a big move in there. I know Pelinka's going to try to go for the big move. He certainly doesn't. I mean, again, running it back to me just wouldn't really make sense because we didn't play well at all this year in the sense that we had any sort of fluidity to the offense. So I wouldn't run it back.
I would only run it back because of how good we looked when we were healthy, and when we were not even fully healthy, we were up 2-1 on the Suns. That's the only reason I'd run it back. And then also just because we're pretty hard capped and there's minimal options. And so we can bring a lot of guys back for the veteran minimum and then go into the luxury tax for our own players. And then, you know, you reassess at the trade deadline. If you got to move someone, you move someone at the trade deadline. And, you know, you could bring back like a THT and re-sign him to a long-term contract. And that's a nice trade piece. He's a nice young player. You resign Schroeder. That's a contract you can move. You have Kuzma. You have KCP. You bring back Caruso on a nice little contract. You have a draft pick. You draft someone nice. He looks good early on. So I just think you put yourself in a better position with resources. If you wait till the trade deadline. So we'll see, man, but you never know, man. Bron's always recruiting and Pelinka's always working. So we'll see what's up, man. Let's go to our next question, bro. Our next question from Aronias M27. He's asking, do the Lakers still have any faith with Kuzma or do you think they try and trade him away? Kuzma, man, he's a polarizing player. People have a lot of different opinions on him, man. What are your thoughts on Kuzma?
Oh, he's getting traded. Without a doubt, he's getting traded.
What makes you so confident?
Just because he hasn't improved. He hasn't improved since his rookie season.
See, I disagree.
I don't disagree. I mean, you could say, oh, he's gotten better on defense, but as far as offense, he has not improved. And you cannot say he has because he is not.
So go ahead. I'll let you finish and I'll tell you my point.
No, yeah, I think he gets traded away. It seems like Laker fans have finally, you know, gotten tired of him, especially seeing what everyone else has done after leaving the Lakers. He played really poorly in a big game, which is something Lakers fans are very critical of. If you want to play in LA, you got to show up. And it just seems like he's, you know, he's done in LA.
So do I think they still have faith in him? Yes. Do I think they try to trade him away? Yes. Only if – I would say they trade him away only if they can get a legitimate quality third player. Now, that doesn't have to be a star. You know, I threw out the scenario for Buddy Hield earlier. It could be for a Buddy Hield. It could be for a Miles Turner, you know, from Indiana, a center who can shoot the three and defends the rim really well. So I think if they can address one of their needs, they look to trade him. But I don't think it's because the Lakers have lost faith in him. I think he has improved. I think he's a better defender. I think he's a better passer now. I think he's a better playmaker. Now, people always point to his offense. Well, he's not, you know, he hasn't improved offensively since his rookie season. You have to remember when he was a rookie, bro, it was a losing team. He was the first offensive option. So he could shoot up all the shots he wanted, you know, post up all he wanted, have the ball in his hands all he wanted. So that's just going to lead to inflated offensive numbers. I thought he shot from three, better this season. I'm curious, man. What was his three-point percentage this season? But I just feel like he shot better this year. I feel like he was a better overall player. You know, maybe the numbers weren't there, but I did feel like he played better overall. So let's see his numbers this year. So he shot 36% from the 3-point line. That's his second best shooting season since his rookie year. And he took the same attempts. His rookie season, he took 5.6. This year, he took 5.6 attempts, and he shot 36%. So, he shot better from, you know, the field in general from his rookie season. He shot 52% compared to 51. Didn't get to the free throw line as much. Didn't shoot as good from the free throw line. Rebounded pretty well. His second highest rebound total. Assists would have been second highest total assist season. And 12.9 points. I mean, that's solid, man. That's solid for, you know, someone who's like 6'8", 6'9", you know, can defend, you know, 2s, 3s, and 4s pretty well. Has bought into his role. Is a younger player. You know, he's only 25 still. And still has room to get better, man. I'm not trading him away just for anything, man.
Are you trading for a first round pick?
No. If you can get more,
then yeah, get more.
I wouldn't trade him for a first round pick, because what are we gonna, I just don't think that draft picks is, you believe that draft picks is just gonna get us a star. Like, I disagree. I don't think it will, because our draft picks are not gonna be very valuable. You know, no one's gonna give you like a top, you know, a draft pick that can turn into a lottery pick for Kyle Kuzma. I don't think they will. I think he has more value on our team just for what he can do. And I think he's someone like he played this year in the playoffs. He's a top 8 player on the team. And, you know, those players don't grow on trees. He has, you know, postseason experience. And here's the thing. Like, why are we all dumping on Kuzma for his poor playoffs when everyone played shitty in the playoffs. So I don't know why Kuzma catches more slack than others.
Because he was supposed to be that number 3 guy for the Lakers, and he hasn't been that number 3 guy for the Lakers.
We learned last year that he wasn't the third option, so I didn't have expectations for him to be the third option this year. That was Schroeder's role, and he played like shit, so we should be dumping on him way more.
Yeah, we are dumping on both of those guys, and that's why we all feel like they should be traded.
Nah, I keep Kyle Kuzma unless I'm getting like a Buddy Hield or, you know, someone better in return. That's my minimum. I'll throw another name in there. A Malcolm Brogdon type player. So like a Malcolm Brogdon, Buddy Hield, you know, a solid improvement over him, over who Kuzma is, a solid like role player. You know, if I'm not getting that back, then I'm good. All right. So our next question from @WackyFrisbee, he says, are you concerned with AD's injuries, or do you attribute it to the short off season?
No, I'm not concerned. And yes, it's the short off season. That's why most teams that went the distance in the bubble are now gone from the playoffs, or have players who have injuries, like the Jazz and like the Denver Nuggets. So it absolutely has to do with Adam Silver's need to increase revenue at the expense of players, because that's exactly what he did. Am I worried? No, because this seems to be. You know, one of those things that people like to play up, which is AD always being injured, AD always missing parts of the season because he's injured. And when you go back and you look at his injury-related, I guess, you know, sittings during his career, it's like under 20 or something. He's only ever missed like 20 games due to injury in his career. So people like to play that up for whatever reason. I don't know, but it's absolutely not true. It's a narrative that just, you know, probably got played up on, you know, some ESPN daytime TV show, and then people picked it up and ran with it, but there's no substance to it. I'm not concerned he'll be back. And that's that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not really concerned. you know, I was concerned a little bit about the calf, possible Achilles injury, but he took that, you know, took care of that. But it's just the, you know, it's the, what they call it, the kinetic chain, right? The, you know, everything is kind of connected. And so, you know, I feel like those injuries kind of compound. So, but it, he didn't look right from the beginning of the season. And we all talked about how that was due to the short off season. So, not really tripping on that. But he has another question for us. He's saying, what do you believe was Vogel's reasoning behind not playing Montrezl Harrell more than 15 minutes a game? This is a great question because a lot of people were mad about Harrell not playing more. So I have my thoughts on why he didn't play very much, Edgar, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Vogel has a kind of center that he likes, and Tress doesn't meet those, you know, features, I guess you'd call them. And so Vogel doesn't believe he can be effective out on the floor. Not much else to it.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing is Tress played a ton of minutes during the regular season, right? But all those minutes were before Drummond came, right? And then Drummond came and Vogel was kind of in this position where it was either Gasol or Tress who was losing minutes. And so you got to look at matchups, right? You got to look at matchups. DeAndre Ayton was averaging probably like what? 30 to 36 minutes a game, would you say, Edgar, against the Lakers in the playoffs? DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah.
Right, safe to say, maybe like 32. Let's just give it an easy number. 32 minutes a game against the Lakers. Montrezl Harrell cannot be in there for any of those minutes. He cannot defend Ayton. It's a bad matchup for him. So you can say, well, put in Anthony Davis at the five and then put Harrell at the four. Well, then that forces Harrell to guard out in the perimeter. And that's just not his strong suit. And so it was just a, you know, when you get to the playoffs, man, it's really easy to expose a bad defender and pick on him. So just like the Suns put Gasol consistently in pick and rolls and he was getting blown by and stuff, I think they would have done the same thing to Harrell. But the benefits of having like Drummond and Gasol in is that you get rebounding. And we saw that the Suns were a very tough rebounding battle for us. Ayton was cleaning up the glass, and so it was important that we had size on the court. And so I think that's part of it. I think part of it is the matchup with DeAndre Ayton, rebounding, defense, and just it's really hard to play Harrell at the four without Gasol or AD at the five. But that's not a lineup that we played a lot. You know, Gasol at the five and Harrell at the four. So you're not going to experiment then. So I thought it was just a bad matchup for Harrell this series. And I just thought that Vogel felt more comfortable going to Gasol because of his shooting, the spacing he offers, his passing, and his ability to rebound and defend. And then Drummond is all defense and rebounding, not really much on offense. And so though I would say though, I argue that Harrell is the better offensive player of all the centers. I think the defensive drop off is huge. So just, you know, and it's a series we struggle to score. So I guess you could have said, well, put Harrell in. He'll help you, you know, he'll help you on offense, but then you're losing a lot on defense. So it's a big trade off. So yeah, I would say that's why that happened. All right. Our last couple fan questions. So Micah Harry 21, he says, what is your ideal productive offseason scenario for the Lakers? So I'll start on this one because I know you're going to say some shit crazy. So let me go first. My ideal productive offseason is run it back. Run it back. Maybe don't bring Drummond and Harrell back and get more shooting and a better defensive center to play behind Gasol or ahead of Gasol. But besides that, run it back. Bring THT back, bring Schroeder back, Caruso, Keith, Matthews, bring everyone back. And you don't need three centers. So if Harrell or, you know, I would say let Harrell and Drummond both go, replace one of them with a better shooter and get yourself another defensive center. I like Daniel Theis, you know, he could shoot the three a little bit. You know, maybe if you can get a center who could play defense and shoot the three a little bit, that'd be ideal. And then get another wing that can shoot. Yeah, That would be my ideal productive offseason, considering that we're very hard capped and it's going to be hard to make trades. My dream scenario would probably be getting like someone like Buddy Hield, because I think that's realistic. I don't think any of these other targets are very realistic. All right, Edgar, go ahead. Give us your...
You're crazy, man. You're crazy. Running it back is the craziest idea out there. We can't shoot from three. And running it back would mean we still couldn't shoot from three.
But that's why I said don't bring both centers back and get a shooter.
Yeah, but who are you gonna get that's a shooter? You gotta get creative with it, man. You gotta change it up. You don't bring Schroeder back. You don't bring Drummond back. You don't bring, you trade KCP, you trade Kuzma. You start over with the core intact, the core being LeBron James, Anthony Davis. And then everyone else is up for, grabs. Try to get, the first round picks, like I said earlier, and then go after a star. Right? I think that's exactly what you do. Someone's going to want Schroeder, especially if he doesn't command the kind of money he wanted to get. So if 485 is what he gets, I'm sure someone will pick him up. One series doesn't overshadow a career, and Schroeder's still a pretty decent player. People will forget that he had a bad game, but his, statistics throughout his career will remain, and I think those will outweigh any ill sentiment that he got from these, past playoffs. So you sign and trade him somewhere, you get those first round picks, and you go after a big star. You go after Bradley Beal, and you sign him, and then you win the championship.
All right. I'm gonna edit my answer since you said I'm crazy for running it back. All right, here's my non-crazy answer: trade Kuzma, KCP, go get Buddy Hield, re-sign Dennis Schroeder, bring back Keith, bring back Matthews, bring back Dudley, bring back Caruso, THT, McKinney, and then don't bring back Drummond, don't bring back Harrell. Go get like a Gorgie Dang, or go get like a Daniel Theis, or even fuck it, like a Kelly Olynyk or something. Go get a whatever. Go get a veteran minimum center, let Gasol and them split the minutes at center. And then go get, you could target like a J.J. Redick, or a Bazemore, or a Reggie Bullock on the wings, or a Doug McDermott, or an Otto Porter Jr. So that's why I say bring in one elite shooter to complement the starting lineup, and then try to get some wings that can shoot for the second unit, or maybe even a Derrick Rose to run the second unit or something. So that's what I'll say. Give me Buddy Hield. But that'll do it for this episode, man. Thank you to everyone that shot us some questions. We appreciate it. And we'll continue to take your questions. We'll keep posting those, just things you guys want us to discuss for the Lakers, since we're in the offseason, man. Now it's the time to dream and look at the rumors and play with the trade machine and see what we can dream up. But we appreciate you guys hanging out and rocking with us. Keep following us on Twitter at @CityOfChamps. Make sure you guys visit the website at www.cityofchips.com. Make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast on Apple Pod, Spotify, and anywhere else where you can listen to the podcast. We appreciate the love, we appreciate the support, and just keep interacting and engaging with us, y'all. Peace.